Our reading this morning is taken from Luke's Gospel, starting at chapter 5 and verse 33, and going into chapter 6, verse 11. They said to him, "John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking." Jesus answered, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days they will fast." He told them this parable. "No one tears a piece out of a new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise they would have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise the new wine will burst the skins, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins, and no one after drinking old wine wants the new, for they say the old is better." One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields, and his disciples began to pick some ears of corn, rub them in their hands, and eat the grain. Some of the Pharisees asked, "Why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" Jesus answered them, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." On another Sabbath he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew what they were thinking and said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Get up and stand in front of everyone." So he got up and stood there. Then Jesus said to them, "I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath to do? To do good or to do evil? To save life or to destroy it?" He looked round at them all and then said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He did so, and his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious and began to discuss with one another what they might do to Jesus.
As I've said, this is the first Sunday of Lent, and some of you may have given up something for Lent, made your commitment to a Lenten-type fast, and you may already be regretting it, because 4 days without chocolate is a bridge too far for some of you. However, consider your deprivation in the light of the Lenten fasts that were part of life for Christians in the Middle Ages. Ash Wednesday and Good Friday were considered black fasts in the Middle Ages, and that meant that nothing could be consumed for 24 hours on those 2 days. On the other days of Lent, you were not allowed to eat anything before 3 p.m. in the afternoon. That was the hour of Christ's crucifixion. So you couldn't eat anything before 3 o'clock in the afternoon through Lent. And then you could only eat certain things. You couldn't eat meat. You couldn't eat any fat. You couldn't eat eggs. And you couldn't eat any dairy products. That's no milk, no cheese, no cream, no butter. So maybe going without chocolate until Easter Sunday is not that bad. Fasting, as we think about it, though, is not a uniquely Christian spiritual discipline. It's actually one that we inherited from Judaism. And fasting was one of the three core spiritual disciplines, along with prayer and almsgiving. In the first part of our reading, we find Jesus and his disciples, though, not going along with the prevailing expectation as to how fasting should be practiced. In chapter 5 of Luke's Gospel, verses 33 to 39, we have Luke following on from our reading a couple of weeks ago, where Jesus is gathered around a meal table with his newly called disciple Levi. And around this table are also some of Levi's other tax-collecting chums. And the dubious nature of this gathering has already raised some questions at the meal table, and another one emerges. Why do Jesus' disciples not observe the same discipline of fasting as the Pharisees and the disciples of John the Baptist? There was only one fast required of Jews, and that was on the Day of Atonement, but there were lots of other times and situations that would have necessitated a fast in the life of a Jewish believer. The Pharisees, though, had a very strict regime of fasting every Monday and every Thursday from dawn until dusk, and it seems the disciples of John the Baptist did something similar. In contrast to this abstemious way of life, it seems the disciples of Jesus were far less rigorous. The words of the passage don't seem to indicate that they never fasted, it's just that they don't often fast. Jesus' disciples appear to be more known for their feasting than their fasting. And Jesus, rather than answering the criticism, instead furthers its claims by saying that the disciples are doing exactly what they should be doing. And to explain it, he uses the festive image of a wedding feast. Now, Jewish weddings at the time lasted 7 days, and there was an abundance of wine, food, dance, song, and fun, and all that the guests were required to do was to enjoy themselves. Fasting was out of the question when a wedding was on. And Jesus equates himself with the bridegroom and says, why would a bridegroom's friends ever fast while he is with them? Jesus is not ruling out fasting in general, but he's just saying that now is not the time. While the bridegroom is present, it's celebration time. And feasting takes precedence. And Jesus drives home his point with some illustrations. The first is where a new piece, patch of new cloth is sewn on an old garment. And then when the garment is washed, the new patch shrinks, causing both the garments and the patch to tear. And the second illustration says new wine shouldn't be poured into old wineskins, where it will continue to ferment and expand, bursting what is old and brittle. And there's the final comment to the Pharisees or religious conservatives who would obviously prefer the old to the new, tradition to innovation. The image of the wedding, the new patch and the new wine are key descriptions of the kingdom that Jesus is bringing into the world. That his disciples' lives are to become something entirely new in the light of the gospel. Living as a feast, not a fast. Living clothed in new garments. An image expanded upon by Paul. That his disciples are to be new wineskins, ready for the new wine of the kingdom. And in Jesus, there is new life. And we need to be ready for him to do new things in our lives. Jesus came to bring the new. And the next part of our reading brings this to the fore again. As we move to think about the second part of our reading found in the first 11 verses of chapter 6, I'm reminded of a little story. It is said to have happened many years ago in a church in the Scottish Highlands where strict Sabbath observance was the norm. One day the elders were discussing the matter of keeping the Sabbath holy. And one of them pointed out that Jesus repeatedly broke the Sabbath and had spoken out against its observance. "Ah, yes," replied another elder, "it seems that even our blessed Lord was a bit of a liberal on that matter." And Jesus, compared to the prevailing attitude of Judaism at the time, certainly took a different line regarding the Sabbath. The Sabbath was one of the great defining markers of Judaism, along with circumcision in the food laws. From sunset Friday to sunset Saturday every week, you abstained from virtually everything in order to observe the fourth commandment. There was a rule or precedent for virtually every sort of Sabbath question at the time of Jesus, and the Pharisees had taken on the role of the guardians of the Sabbath. The problems all started in regard to Sabbath observance for Jesus, it seems, on one occasion when his disciples were seen to be walking through a field of wheat, picking some of the ears and rubbing them between their fingers, and then eating them. The problem here was, at the time, the Sabbath regulation said that you could not walk for more than 800 metres on the Sabbath. And also, if you rubbed some grain between your fingers, it was considered that you were reaping and threshing that grain, therefore doing work. Even though it was Jesus' disciples who were accused of this breach, it's Jesus as their teacher who was held responsible, and Jesus who answers on their behalf. And rather than arguing that they're doing this based upon his authority, he starts by using a story from Scripture, but not one from the Torah. Instead, he uses the story of David eating the consecrated bread, which is found in the book of the prophets. And Jesus aligns himself with David and basically says, if David can get away with it, so can I. If David can break the law, I can as well. Why? And this was the big reveal. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. Now this rubs the Pharisees up the wrong way. And so they lay a trap for Jesus on another Sabbath. In a synagogue where Jesus is teaching, they plant a setup. They bring along a man who has a shriveled, likely a paralyzed arm. And I feel quite sorry for this man because he's the Pharisees' stooge. As well as being disabled in a society where disability meant that you were shunned and marginalized, he's put on show when actually all he would have wanted to do was stay in the background. Jesus, though, sees the intention of the Pharisees and turns the attention onto them. He simply asks them, what should you do on the Sabbath, good or evil? And Jesus knows the intention of the Pharisees' hearts is evil. They are challenging, though, Jesus to do something good. And Jesus' way is always the way of life, always the way where human need is given precedence over the observance of the law. The Sabbath laws say that healing could only happen if there was a threat to life or for childbirth. And a paralyzed arm was not life-threatening, but its restoration would be life-giving for that man. The Pharisees have nothing to say in response to Jesus. What could they say? Were they willing to tolerate the suffering of another human being in order to further their agenda? Jesus, in his compassion, heals this man, but he crosses a line here in challenging one of the great pillars of Judaism, and his reputation never recovers. So what might we learn in our lives as Jesus' disciples today? Jesus' teaching in these two passages is a response to the criticism that the way he and his disciples are doing things. The way of Jesus is contrary to the way that things always had been done. Jesus and his disciples do not fast, as the way the Pharisees and the disciples of John the Baptist do. They do not observe the Sabbath laws in the same way that they were expected to do. Jesus is doing things differently. Is this because Jesus is a member of the awkward squad? We all know people who like to be awkward. They say the opposite to everyone else. They just want to be controversial. They deliberately do something in a different way. They might be eccentric. They might say they're being the devil's advocate, but in reality, they're usually just being intentionally difficult. This was not Jesus, though. Jesus did things differently because he was living in a different way, the way of a different kingdom. He wasn't living according to the same rules as the rest of first century culture because he'd come to offer a different way of living for everyone. Jesus coming into the world ushered in the coming of a new kingdom into the world. And with this new kingdom came a new way of living. And this new way of living meant that the old way of doing things was not going to fit anymore. Jesus exampled in his life how this new way looked. Even when it brought him into confrontation with the religious powers of the day. In these two examples we have in our reading, fasting and the Sabbath, we see how the old and the new do not fit together. Fasting had become, in Judaism, not just a practice where you gave up food in order to focus on having more, giving in to more of God in your life, but it became an opportunity for people to show how devout they were. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says this about fasting. When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, because they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. As I said, the Pharisees fasted 2 days a week. But when they fasted, they put whitening on their faces so that everyone around them knew that they were fasting. So they looked good to everyone around them. Jesus is saying, don't do this. Put oil on your face so you look healthy, so you look good, so nobody knows you're doing it. Fasting is between you and God. Jesus is saying, do something different. Fasting for Jesus was about spending time with the Father. And in respect to the Sabbath, the Pharisees and the others acted like the Sabbath police, more concerned about condemning others for breaching the litany of Sabbath rules rather than observing the Sabbath principle of rest, a day where you could reconnect with God. It had become a day of legalism and judgment, rather than a day acknowledging your true relationship between God, his creatures, and creation. Jesus calls out the problem and reclaims the Sabbath as a gift for humanity. Jesus is proclaiming in his teaching that a new time has come, and people can live in a different way because of this. And that's a choice that Jesus presented people with in the first century, and a choice he presents us with today. Do we want to live in the old or the new? Things change rapidly in our world. Something that was the latest fashion or the latest technology only a short while ago is now considered out of date and obsolete. Once upon a time, floppy disks were the latest thing to store portable information on for your computer. Then they got smaller, became CDs, then DVDs, then memory sticks, and now it's all become information on the cloud. If you still have a 5.5-inch floppy disk and you want some information off it, you will struggle to find a way to do it. Everything that was once new becomes old. In Jesus, though, once the new came, the old passed away. And when the new arrived, that was it. It was never going to change, and it never has changed. There were no further upgrades. It was a one-off transition, never to be repeated. And that is why Jesus offered those little illustrations of warning that the old ways will not fit with the new world that he has brought into being. The religious folks of Jesus' world needed to get on board, even though they would have felt like those who made horse-drawn carriages at the time of the rise of the steam engine. Jesus, in his illustrations, is saying that there's no point trying to fit some of the old ways of doing things onto the new ways. The old ways of fasting, the old ways of Sabbath observance, trying to merge the two means you're missing the point of the new age. You have to take the new whole or not at all. Jesus is doing a new thing and he's calling us to a new way of life as well. We can't try and patch bits of Jesus' new way of doing things onto our old way of life. Jesus' story says that when we are washed, the patched garment will rip. You can't try and put something effervescent and alive into an old and brittle wineskin because it will not be able to contain the life within it. Jesus knows we don't like change. That's why he says that almost throwaway comment about still liking the old wine, preferring tradition to innovation. There is something within us that likes rules and regulations, structure of the old kingdom. We all like to be like the Pharisee at times. We like to hark back to the good old days. We like our faith laced with nostalgia. And some people will not like to change. They will not give up their old ways and embrace the ways of God's kingdom. But then we need to remember that the new is so much better. The new way of the kingdom is where you choose to heal rather than condemn. Where you choose good over evil. Where you choose to feast with Jesus over selfish fasting. Where you choose love over judgment. In this season of Lent, where we can have the opportunity to examine our lives of discipleship, maybe we can see if we fully embrace the new, if we're fully turned over a new leaf, if we fully decided to live in the new kingdom following Jesus, or whether we've still decided to settle in the old. The image of the new defining our lives is something that Paul writes about a lot in his letters, and I'm going to leave us with some words from his letter to the Colossians as to what the new might look like in our lives. As God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, since as members of one body you were called to peace, and be thankful. And whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. May God, through his Spirit, see this new life revealed in our lives. Amen.